And you might have, you know, the best idea for a podcast in the entire world, but if you can't make it in a way where it's at the same level as what the broadcasters are doing, it's going to be very difficult.
You're listening to the Mark in Russia podcast, broadcasting from the belly of the bear in Chelyabinsk, Russia. Kick back and enjoy the show. Don't be a pussy.
In 3, 2, 1.
Hi, this is Mark, and today I'm speaking with Nick Dunkerley, who is the co-founder of Hindenburg Systems. Hindenburg Systems produces and markets what is, in my opinion, the absolute best audio processing programs for broadcasters and podcasters, Hindenburg Journalist and Hindenburg Journalist Pro. Nick has had 15 years in broadcast radio as an engineer, producer, and journalist with the Danish National Broadcast Company. In addition, he worked for the community public radio stations in Zambia. That's Africa, for the geographically challenged amongst us, as a consultant. And this is where the idea for Hindenburg Journalist was born. I use and love this audio program. For purposes of disclosure, I purchased mine for the full price, and I'm not being compensated in any way for this interview. For me, it was a pleasure to talk to the person who dreamt up this great product. Well, let's listen now to Nick as he discusses the history of the product, the future of broadcast radio and podcasting, and other rather visionary ideas. Okay, first, Nick, I'd like to thank you for agreeing to this interview. I think our listeners would really like to hear what you have to say.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, now, Nick, you're the creative director with Hindenburg Systems, and you developed and you market Hindenburg Journalist and Hindenburg Journalist Pro audio editing programs. And I know these things have been making quite a splash since they were introduced in 2010, was it, Nick?
Yes, it was.
Could you please tell me, just the title creative director sounds really great, but what is that? What is a creative director?
That is actually a very good question. I'm not quite sure what other creative directors actually do, but I can say what I'm doing is I basically have the ideas for the program, and I leave it up to knowledgeable people to actually make it work.
So Nick, are you also sort of the public voice for Hindenburg?
Yes. The whole background of that is that I came up with the idea for the program, and with my own background in broadcasting radio, I've taken the experiences that I've gathered from there and put them all into the program. And then I can use the team around me to actually make it work, because I don't know anything about software development, to be honest. So I just come up with the overall ideas, and I'm fortunate enough to have people around me who can actually catch these ideas and make it into something that works.
Well, actually, with that description, the title creative director is pretty good title, pretty descriptive, I think. You know, Nick, I one of the things that impressed me before I ever even used your program, Hindenburg, is your company's mission statement and also the stated strategy that you have on your website. Would you mind telling us just what these are, both the mission statement and strategy?
Well, the mission statement is it's all about the story, and it's the reason I chose that one was to say that it is about storytelling, obviously, but because most audio editors are about all kinds of audio production. And I just wanted to say, well, we're actually focusing on storytelling and not music production and not movie production or anything like that. So I'm just trying to say it's a very focused program. And what's behind that is we're trying to make a program so journalists are able to tell stories, basically. So, but the radio media and audio media can be quite inaccessible in many ways. Because you need quite some knowledge to do it properly. So what we're trying to do is basically take a really, really good media, which is the audio media, and make it accessible for really good storytellers. So what we're trying to do with the program is let storytellers just focus on that, telling stories, and we try to do our best to guide them and help them tell the stories so they actually end up with something in a broadcast quality that they can be proud of.
From what I can see, what you just described to me and what I've seen and experienced myself, I think it's a great goal because it kind of focuses on bringing more, for lack of a better term, citizen journalists, maybe more of an involvement. I mean, a lot of people go on YouTube or something and make some sort of videos, but not very professional sounding or anything else. And if it doesn't sound right, of course, content is king, but I know sound is also very important. If it doesn't sound halfway professional, you won't get the audience that maybe you'd like to get. Whereas with your program, I don't want to make it sound like it's a simple program, but it is a simple program, I think, to learn. Simple program, though, of course, doesn't mean not a powerful program. It's actually very powerful and just very automated. So where did you get the idea for this program, Nick? What gave you the idea initially when you first started to develop it?
Well, it was out of need. It's one of those stories where I was trying to find a program like this, and not for myself, because my background is I am a studio engineer and a journalist, so I kind of know how to use all these programs. But I was working in Zambia at the time on a community radio. And one of the problems I was facing there was to make this community radio attractive for the community, we needed the community to actually participate. So we needed rural journalists, and we needed basically anyone who had a story to be able to tell it. Hmm. That was kind of my quest at the time. And I was thinking, well, if to achieve this, we need some software that anyone basically can buy or get it down free or whatever, and then use it. So I was looking at all kinds of programs like Audacity and Adobe and Pro Tools and what have you, and thinking, well, they're all great programs. They really are. But seen through the eyes of a radio journalist, and especially ones with no previous experience, they were very, very, well, what's the right word for it?
Daunting.
That is the right word for it. So I was thinking, well, that's a bit of a problem. And if I try to introduce these tools at the radio station, they will probably not be used in the right way. So I had a friend of mine who is now the co-founder of the company who visited me at the time there. And he's a programmer, so he actually knows what he's talking about. So I asked him, well, have you ever heard of a program that can do this? You know, it was really simple, but we still need to uphold a high quality of program. And he said, no, there's nothing out there. And it was one of those evenings where, you know, I don't know if you've ever been in Africa, but, you know, typically it's late at night, the power goes out and you're sitting on your veranda and in the dark, and all you can do is talk in the dark.
Mm. So I haven't been there, but I can picture this, sure.
So anyway, we were sitting there with probably a gin and tonic or something, as you do. And mm-hmm. and I kind of just asked the question, well, how difficult can it be to develop this? And he's a programmer. And he said, well, it can be quite difficult, to be honest. And I said, well, can it be done? And he said, of course it can be done. It's, you know, it's only software. And that kind of sparked it from there. And we sat down and did the initial drawings on it and got some ideas for how it should work. And it just took off from there, really.
So initially, you know, as you stated, it was, you thought of it and it was designed out of need in Zambia and for the radio people there. And how did it make the leap from Zambia to Denmark, to America, to Europe?
Well, I came back to Denmark after a period in Africa, and I started developing it with Preben, who's the co-founder and the programmer, and we needed someone to test it on. And since my background was with the national broadcaster, obviously I have a huge amount of friends and old colleagues there, so I asked a couple of them, would they like to try to be alpha testers of the program? Mm-hmm. And they said, sure, why not? And I was quite amazed by that, actually, because they already had a program they were working with. So we gave them our program, and it was in really, really early phases of this, and it was just stable. and they loved it.
Really?
They really loved it. It was just from there, we got new ideas for new features, and we just kept developing it. And suddenly we were also developing it so it would be useful for broadcasters, which wasn't really initially the idea, but we could suddenly we saw there was a need also for broadcasters.
Now, a lot of broadcasters were using or are using, you know, other tools, maybe, you know, Pro Tools, other things. In your opinion, why perhaps would Hindenburg Journalist, Pro, be a better fit for these radio stations? And I mean, what advantages does Hindenburg offer to them?
Well, that's always a difficult one for me to answer. You should probably ask them. But if you did ask me anyway, I would say what we're doing is we're making a very focused tool. And as I was saying before, the other tools are great tools, especially Pro Tools. I've been working with Pro Tools myself for years, and I love it as a tool for music production. It's great for music production, but it lacks some of the features that you need for radio production. And one of the things that I was focusing on in the beginning and was as we were developing this was to keep saying, well, there is a huge difference between producing for radio and producing music. They seem similar, you know, it's audio and you're mixing mm-hmm. and everything. So many of the features are the same, but really they're not, because your workflow is completely different when you're doing audio productions for, you know.
I know just from personal experience, I mean, even, you know, using, you know, Audacity, something free or something inexpensive but powerful like Reaper, these were good programs, but the learning curve for somebody who's not involved in music and doesn't need all of those features, it's a really steep learning curve. I think the learning curve with your program is not as steep. You can learn a lot with your program just looking at other samples that people have done to see how they did it, you know? It's very visual and intuitive.
That is kind of the point. You know, it should be very easy and intuitive to just get started. And it mm-hmm. There's another thing, because if you're not encouraged when you start out in audio production to think, well, this is a really, really cool media, if you're going to spend way too much time just learning the basic tools, you're never really going to get into it.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. You know. Now we're speaking about radio, and I mean, ever since the invention of television, people keep saying, you know, radio's dead, you know, but radio does, it reinvents itself periodically when it needs to. It's very, very resilient, and, you know, even the newspapers which proclaim that radio is dead, those newspapers, many of them are dead, but radio's still alive.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, we have a real tidal shift in radio happening right now where... You know, a lot of, you know, satellite radio. I don't know. It's kind of like just homogenization of radio, you know, whereas a lot of the local flavor seems to be going. We have podcasting. We have a lot of different things happening now. I was wondering if maybe you could, you know, you're a professional and everything. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your idea of the future of radio.
It's a very interesting topic because no one really seems to know at the moment where things are going. Mm-hmm. And I go to conferences all over the world at the moment, and it's the question that's on everyone's lips. Where is radio going? And I was actually just talking to the head of the technical department of the BBC a couple of days ago about it. And one of the things we were talking about was that we should probably shift away from talking about just radio. We're so used to talking about radio as the media, you know, the box you have in your kitchen or in your car. But really, we should start focusing on, call it an audio media instead, which it can include podcasts and streaming medias and everything, really. Because radio in the olden days, it was really more to do with the technical background of it, you know, the transmission and the receiver. And we don't have that problem anymore. As basically, anyone can be a producer, anyone can transmit their radio program, and anyone can receive it on all different kinds of digital media.
So maybe I've given this some thought myself, more from a podcaster's perspective, where you know, we put podcasts, we put them on the internet. People can download them using like an RSS feed, but RSS feed is not something that, it's simple, but it's still not something that a lot of people understand. I'm just wondering if you see something happening in the future where some sort of a device, an aggregator or a cumulative device that can pull podcasts, you know, satellite radio, internet radio, all types of media into one unit that may be, I mean, radio is a great device, especially in a car. You know, it's a captive audience. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you've given any thought to that, to anything of that nature.
Well, we will actually still probably see in the same situations, either be it a device in the kitchen or a device in the car. It's just a question mm-hmm. of how it receives the information. Is it receiving it using FM, or is it receiving a digital signal using Wi-Fi? And, you know, car manufacturers are seriously talking about implementing Wi-Fi receivers in the car so you can actually receive digital media. So you might as well be listening to, I don't know, Spotify or Pandora in your car, mm-hmm. which suddenly makes it a completely new market. So if you've got streaming media in your car, what would you need non-stop music radio stations for, and so on and so forth? Mm-hmm. So everything's really changing at the moment.
I know that the only problem, I don't know about all of the different ones, but some of these programs or these services that are currently working in some cars, I think some Ford, some BMWs, but they're not available everywhere. For example, I'm podcasting from Russia, and here these services are not available. You can't even link to them on the internet due to licensing agreements not being signed. So it's in Denmark, can you get these services like Stitcher and
in the car?
Well, even on your computer.
Well, yeah, you can get Stitcher on your computer. I love Stitcher. It's a great program. I actually use that in the kitchen. Then I can just basically listen to whatever of my favorite podcasts I like, or just get something that I've never heard of. You know, that's also interesting. And that's another thing. Oh, there's so many topics here. Way too many. Well, podcast. I love podcasts. I listen to podcasts all the time. But I still do think if I put on my public service goggles for a second, there is a problem with podcasts because it's a pull medium. And so basically you're only listening to what you're interested in. And
sure.
That is, in a democratic sense, a bit of a problem. You need to be forced, and this, you can hear I'm coming from the old-fashioned public service background here. You
okay.
need to be forced to listen to something that you didn't know was interesting in some ways. And this is what, you know, national broadcasters can do. And that's what you can do with flow media. But you can't do that with pull media. And there, I think there's a really going to be an interesting it's an interesting area to see how the broadcaster is going to fill that. And I think BBC is actually doing a very good job at it with their internet.
Well, that's actually a very good point, because you're right. You only download things that you're interested in, but without exposure to some of these other things, you have no idea of how good it may be.
Yep.
Speaking of, I mean, like podcasts, I mean, there are so many podcasters and so many podcasts available. These are non-professionals as a rule. So they don't have, you know, your background in broadcast, but in the same respect, they also don't have a loyalty to a particular audio editing program.
Mm.
It's not a situation where they think, well, I worked with this program at the station. So they're a clean slate. And I think they just have a potential to be you know, to form a new large group of customers for your business. Many of these people get free programs like Audacity or something. What could you tell a podcaster in terms of the advantage that, let's say, Hindenburg Journalist can offer over Audacity? I mean, we discussed, of course, the learning curve, but what other advantages could you think of?
I need to start that one somewhere else, actually. Because as you were saying, there are many podcasts out there, and I'm guessing there are many really good storytellers out there as well. But there's a huge amount of competition.
Yes.
And one of the main competitors in this, well, not just one, but you know, as a group, are actually the national broadcasters. Mm-hmm. Because most of them are now podcasting their material as well. And obviously they they have the resources to make great radio programs, and so the podcasts that they make are really good. And if you listen to some of the BBCs or NPRs, your background is American, so you might be following like
NPR.
Yeah, so you might be listening to This American Life or Radiolab.
Sure. Transom. Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic programs.
Radiolab, I especially like.
Yeah, I love that program. And the situation for any podcaster is that this is the field that they're competing in. And you might have, you know, the best idea for a podcast in the entire world, but if you can't make it in a way where it's at the same level as what the broadcasters are doing, it's going to be very difficult. So, and this comes back to what can our program do? What our program actually does is it kind of automates the whole process of getting your program up to broadcast level. Obviously, we can't do everything, but we do what we can at least.
Oh, it does a lot, and it does it very, very well. And as you said, it's automatic. It's like magic. You know? Really, my experience, it's wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
You know? Well, I mean, your product, I think, does fulfill, you know, what you're saying. It's about the story. Someone like myself or like most other people, it's very difficult, if you do have a story to tell, to also have to learn all the technical details. You know, so if there are fewer things for us to learn in a program that does it automatically, it's great. So,
and hopefully you're encouraged to play around with it more. One of the best feedbacks I got from an old radio colleague of mine wrote to me and said he was now for the first time in many years felt motivated to actually produce interesting radio, not just produce any radio because you had to, but produce something that was interesting. In a way that he could play around with it. You know, he just gave him the sense back that he could just, you know, be a kid again and pull all kinds of stuff in there and it wouldn't go wrong.
And now, I mean, as a podcaster, I use Hindenburg Journalist. I love it. It has the features that I need. You also have Hindenburg Journalist Pro, which, you know, it appears to be geared more towards broadcasters.
Yeah, actually, there's only some quite minute differences. Because we really want to get everyone on board. You know, this is from out in the bush to podcasters and freelance journalists and stringers and what have you, but also the broadcasters. So broadcasters have very specific needs. And that could be, I don't know, in the export formats, only broadcasters, MP2, the MP2 as an example. Mm-hmm. Only broadcasters need that.
But you have a couple of really tempting features on the Journalist Pro. For example, the loudness meter, I don't know that much about it, but the ability to, tune the program for your voice.
Yeah, the voice profiler. That's quite nice.
That seems like nice. And then the other thing, I mean, word on the street is that you're also going to be incorporating a Skype recorder into your Pro version. Is that correct? Can you talk about that?
No, that's correct. That will be coming out late this year.
Okay, and that's in the Pro version,
yes.
Right? Yeah. Now, see, these are some tempting things that make a podcaster maybe want to make that jump, you know?
Even the Pro version is not that hugely expensive.
No, it's not. Not compared to other things. It's much more, as you mentioned, much more targeted towards broadcasters and therefore really podcasters also.
Yeah. Well, so, some podcasters can, you know, easily call themselves for pro. It's been difficult to us to find a balance because on the one hand, we would like to make it accessible for as many people as possible. But obviously, we still need to make some kind of business out of it. And let's be honest,
of course,
we're in a niche market. We're talking about radio and talk radio and even, you know, Moncharged radio, like features and documentaries. You know, there's not that much of it out there right now. I'm hoping that we will see more of it. You know, if we can make it our little contribution to making the talk radio more interesting for the main media, that would be great. But I'm straying off the point now. I'm just saying that our consumer version is really cheap. It's $95, and that's like basically nothing.
It is very cheap. It's well worth the money, you know. I mean, I think that your program is really, you know, maybe this sounds like I'm going too far, but I mean, I think it's a real game changer for a lot of people, you know.
That's a very nice word for it. Can
well,
I use that?
I mean,
that?
Even your, you absolutely can, you know. It is a game changer because, it, as you mentioned, even your friend who's a, you know, explained his feelings, how it empowers him and motivates him, and therefore it does make it a game changer, and it has the potential to, well, just say bring a lot more voices out to be heard, you know, maybe some very interesting ones.
Well, hopefully it will. Some projects I can't dwell too much into, but I can say on the overall scale of it, there are some ideas right now out there when it comes to, on the one hand, collaboration, and the other hand, program exchange. Program exchange is very interesting because suddenly you're listening to programs that are made in completely other countries on the other side of the world, and suddenly you're hearing someone talk about topics that are might be close to you, but seen from a completely different perspective, and all that is I find very, very interesting. But one of the problems there is if the overall quality of it is not very good, we're going back to what we talked about before. If the quality of the programs are not that good, you're not going to spend time on them. So if we can raise the overall quality of these audio productions, then suddenly we're not talking about the quality anymore. We're talking about the content. And there are some really, really good storytellers out there.
In the interest of keeping the podcast to a manageable size in terms of attention span, the interview will be continued in a week in part two. In part two, Nick makes some rather amazing observations in which all podcasters need to keep in mind, and also discusses some issues which must be overcome in order for podcasters to not be marginalized by the big public broadcasting companies. In case you hadn't noticed, this is already happening. He'll also discuss the future of radio as we know it and how audio media is merging into our educational systems. Please check my show notes for additional material and also for links. Nick is a great guy, and if you have any questions, I'll provide the web address and also Nick's email address. As usual, thanks for listening until the end of the podcast, and join me again in a week when I finish my interview with Nick. Until then, goodbye.
That's a wrap.